capacity, it is incumbent upon me to do that, to represent more than just me here today.
The mighty, mighty union!
Of rallies in my day, obviously, and I gotta say, this is one of the most powerful rallies I've been to, and I think it's because the unions are here, and the unions are so united, and it's just giving me a huge boost of hope that we're going to get over this authoritarian scheme, and we'll come out on top, and I feel that with all my heart. I'm just grateful to the unions. We're on the precipice of losing our democracy. These authoritarian Republicans and their sycophants that are enabling them are putting our democracy at risk. I feel like they're acting with such impunity now that it's sort of scary. They must feel that they don't have to worry about losing elections anymore. And we have to show them that, yes, they do. We're not going to take this lying down.
My name is Kristen Flanders. I'm an actor and with this SDC union member. But my sign says, support federal workers, the CDC, saved my daughter's life. When I was pregnant, I was told that I had contracted measles, but the only place where it could be proved was at the CDC. I'm sorry, I'm going to cry. They had to take some amniotic fluid from me, and they had to send it. There was only one place in the country that tested my amniotic fluid, and it was the CDC, and I did not have measles. So I was getting advice that I should terminate the pregnancy, and I have a great daughter because of the CDC.
Thank you for sharing your story. And what is your message to, right now we're seeing a measles epidemic, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., spreading disinformation. What is your message to him and your message to the Trump administration trying to dismantle federal agencies like the CDC?
My message to RFK would be, I went to school with kids who were severely damaged because their parents, mothers had measles when they were pregnant. And the most important thing is vaccination for public health. We have eradicated it. And it's irresponsible. And science is a great and effective and a wonderful thing. And we have to trust it.
My name is Pat. And looking at the news, reading the news, and seeing what is happening in the last 100 days, I don't think one can help but be moved and angry and inspired to do just a little bit, even if it's to be part of the march, to see if we can turn things around. It's scary. I am a naturalized citizen, and I don't think I'm any safer than anybody who's there. And when you get to feeling that way, you feel frustrated, and you just want to do something.
Let's keep it moving, y'all.
I've been a naturalized citizen for over 20 years, but it's still scary, you know? And I tell my friends, they come for them today, they're coming for us in the morning. So I just want to do whatever I can, whenever I can.
And where are you from, and what are you fighting for, and who are you fighting for?
Originally, I'm from Grenada in the West Indies. I've been here since 1968. I went to school. I worked at one company for 31 years. And I'm fighting for my granddaughter, who's 3 years old, and one who's 16 years old, because I don't think things will be the same if we continue this way. The opportunities that I've had, I don't think they'll have it. And it hurts my heart to see people just getting picked up and you don't hear anything about it.
Democracy Now!'s Maria Ines Taracena interviewing May Day marchers in New York on Thursday. Special thanks to Laura Bustillos. When we come back, we'll speak to Professor Angela Davis, who gave the keynote address last night at a Jewish Voice for Peace conference in Baltimore. Stay with us.
Ours is just another skin, simply slips away. Above it, it will shed easily. come and find. I've learned it line by line. One common wire, one silver thread. All that you desire rolls on ahead. Like a ship in a bottle.
Patti Smith performing Grateful in Democracy Now! Studios in 2015, and we are so grateful for that. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in Baltimore with Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
Jewish Voice for Peace is holding a major conference in Baltimore this weekend. The renowned activist, author, and scholar Angela Davis spoke on Thursday night and joins us now in Baltimore. Dr. Davis is the author of many books, including Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement. Her other books include Abolition, Feminism Now, Are Prisons Obsolete, and Women, Race, and Class. Professor Angela Davis is a distinguished professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Amy?
So we're here in Baltimore. Thousands of members of Jewish Voice for Peace have gathered for a weekend of workshops and plenary sessions. Dr. Angela Davis gave a keynote last night, and she's joining us right now. Angela, if you could start off by talking about the history of Black, Jewish, Palestinian solidarity and why you felt it was important to address JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Amy, for inviting me to be on the program, and thank you for your ongoing coverage. I don't know what we would do without Democracy Now. Jewish Voice for Peace has been a powerful force, since its founding, but especially in this period when we're trying to figure out how we negotiate ourselves through this horrendous combination of genocide in Gaza and on the Palestinian people more broadly, and a McCarthyist-type repression that is unfolding here in the United States, especially on the university and college campuses around the country. I think it's very important for people to recognize that as Israel represents itself as the purveyor of genocide and the forces of unfreedom, of course assisted by the United States, it is important to have a powerful force of progressive and radical Jewish people who are working in the tradition of Jewish activists who stand up not only or not primarily for their own people, but who have taught us about international solidarity and what it means to engage in struggles for freedom all over the world. So I'm really excited to be here. I should say that when I spoke last night, it was on a program with Rashida Tlaib, who's, you know, absolutely remarkable, and Omar Barghouti, who's a founding member of BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction. He was not able to attend. He was invited, but of course, neither the U.S. Nor the State of Israel wants to see him join hands with those of us here who are fighting for an end to the genocide.
Professor Davis, you've said that Palestine is a moral litmus test for the world, quoting, of course, the late poet June Jordan. If you could explain why you see it as a litmus test, and to the extent that it is one, whether what's happened in the last a year and a half demonstrates that, in fact, the world has failed that litmus test.
Well, yeah, I thank you so much for bringing up the statement that June Jordan made about the moral litmus test that is Palestine. June Jordan is someone who fought for Palestinian solidarity at a time when the majority of people weren't listening to her. I think about her all the time, and I find myself always wishing that she could witness the surge in support of Palestine all over the country, especially on college campuses, but in trade unions and in progressive movements everywhere. So thank you very much for evoking June, which we should all be doing during this period. Palestine is really the center of the world. And as someone who's been active in the Palestine solidarity struggle for the vast majority of my life, I can say that even as we experience the unimaginable grief of witnessing an ongoing genocide, that is available in terms of being able to witness the consequences all over the world. In one sense, I want to say that this is the movement we've been struggling for decades and decades. Rashid Khalidi has this amazing book entitled The 100-Year War on Palestine. It has been, you know, 100 years. And Zionism is such a powerful force, supported, of course, by the U.S. government and its position as the leading capitalist nation state in the world. And, you know, Zionism is has had such a power that many of us have been disappointed repeatedly over and over again. How is it that people who stood up for South Africa cannot recognize that the same kind of apartheid is at work in the occupation, the Israeli occupation of Palestine? But of course, over the last period, we've seen students all over the country. As a matter of fact, all over the world. I visited a number of universities abroad, and there are, I think, on virtually every campus in the world, there are movements to expand solidarity with Palestine. So we find ourselves in a very difficult moment, a moment of grief, a moment of witnessing the apartheid and the genocide unfolding in a way that we had never imagined before. But at the same time, we recognize that Palestine has never given up. Palestine will never give up. And this is precisely why, even in the worst possible material predicament, with the Israeli bombs having destroyed virtually the entirety of Gaza, we see the Palestinian people who are refusing to give up, who will not give up on their people, who will not give up on their history, who will not give up on their culture, and who will not give up on their ability to express solidarity with other people who are struggling all over the world. And so it's a moment that is a bit difficult to digest, but I do think that even as we cry, even as we express solidarity amidst the suffering, we should recognize that this is a moment we've been waiting for, where people all over the world are recognizing Palestine as a litmus test, and are recognizing that people in the Sudan will not be successful. People in Congo will not be successful. People in Haiti will not be successful if they do not follow the leadership of the Palestinian people, who absolutely refuse to capitulate and genuflect to Zionism and to global capitalism and to racism.
Angela Davis, we're talking to you on this week of the first 100 days of President Trump's second term. Multiple polls show that his polling is lower on issues from the economy to immigration than any modern president, and than any president in the last 80 years. The New York Times ran a front page headline, "There have never been 100 days like this." And at the same time, you have judge after judge ruling against President Trump. And this especially goes to the issue of those who stood up for Palestinian rights, who have been detained, who have been jailed, like the Columbia University student and Palestinian activist Mohsen Mahdawi, who a judge has just released in Vermont and will be graduating from Columbia, coming to New York. The judge's writing on this said, "The court also considers the extraordinary setting of this case and others like it. Legal residents not charged with crimes or misconduct are being arrested and threatened with deportation for stating their views on the political issues of the day." The judge went on, "Our nation has seen times like this before, especially during the Red Scare and Palmer raids of 1919 and 1920 that led to the deportation of hundreds of people suspected of anarchist or communist views." I'm wondering, are you seeing a sea change at this point? The cratering of the economy, the contracting of the economy, the cratering of the polls, judge after judge ruling against Trump, and hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. What does this say to you, as you've been such a longtime activist, where we all stand now?
Well, thank you for that question, Amy. I think it is important to acknowledge that Trump was not elected by a majority of the people in this country. As a matter of fact, more people did not vote for Trump as voted than voted for him. So we're not seeing a president who, you know, has the power of the people behind him. Quite the contrary. And I think that as those of us who are standing for justice and for freedom and for a better future, it's essential to recognize that we are actually in the majority, that we are on the right side of history, that we should follow the example of the Palestinian people and not give up, not succumb to the assumption that this person was elected and therefore he and his people get to dictate the direction of history. Of course, an enormous amount of damage is being done. And we know from the last administration the kind of damage that was done to the court system in this country, for which it will require untold numbers of years to recuperate from that. At the same time, I think that those of us who have been around for a long time recognize that what is happening at this moment does not dictate what is going to be happening tomorrow. Of course, the last 100 days appear to have been an eternity, and I don't think anyone has ever experienced this kind of horrendous damage being done by a person holding the executive power within such a short period of time. But at the same time, I think we should stand back and look at history and recognize that tomorrow will not be a reflection of what is happening in this moment. That, like the Palestinian people and the 100-year war against the Palestinian people, we have to hold strong. We have to engage in resistance, large acts of resistance and small acts of resistance. I am persuaded that in the end, we are the ones who are going to be able to determine the direction of history.
Thank you so much, Dr. Angela Davis. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Professor Davis, for joining us in Baltimore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman in Baltimore. We end the show with an update on Badr Khan Suri, the Georgetown University professor and postdoctoral scholar who was arrested in March by masked federal agents outside of his home in Virginia. He had a hearing Thursday before a Biden-appointed judge who gave Trump officials 24 hours to provide details on when they decided to move Suri across at least five ICE facilities to an ICE jail in Texas, where he remains separated from his wife, who's a U.S. citizen of Palestinian descent, and his three children. For more, we're joined now by Mary Bauer, executive director of the ACLU of Virginia, and Nadir Hashemi, professor of Middle East and Islamic politics at Georgetown University and director of the center where Badr Khan Suri was hired as a postdoctoral fellow, Georgetown Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. Welcome both to Democracy Now! Nadir Hashemi, if we could begin with you. You very recently went to visit Badr Khan Suri in the ICE detention facility where he now is in Texas. If you could tell us about that visit.
Well, I went to visit him because since his arrest on March the 17th, no one had actually gone down to meet him. So I figured out where he was. I called the detention facility and I was able to meet him, but of course not face to face. One of the shocking things that I learned when I went to the ICE detention facility was that Badr Khan Suri has been designated by the Department of Homeland Security as a high security, high risk threat prisoner. So he has restricted rights in the detention facility. He only gets 2 hours of fresh air a week. There are constant roll calls to determine his presence in the prison, and you're not able to meet high-risk prisoners face-to-face. So I had to speak with him through a window via an intercom telephone. You know, he told me about the conditions that were in that prison, and they were, you know, quite shocking and quite horrific. One of the things that I took away from the meeting was really his spirit of resistance. I wrote an essay on this topic that people can look up and find more details, but Badr Khan Suri was very adamant that the suffering and the pain that he has faced and that his family has been subjected to will be worth it if it helps expose, number one, the naked authoritarianism of the Trump administration, and number two, if his incarceration keeps the spotlight on the genocide on Gaza. So I was really touched by his willingness to fight back and to, you know, have his day in court and push back against the charges that have been directed against him by the Trump administration.
Larry Bauer, you're executive director of the ACLU of Virginia. If you can give us an update on what the judge said yesterday, and I know things are going to change over these next few days. Today is a deadline for the federal lawyers tomorrow for Sudi's lawyers. Explain why this Indian national, this postdoctoral graduate student and professor at Georgetown, was picked up to begin with, and what did the judge say?
Yes, Dr. Suri was picked up because he had spoken out for peace. He teaches peace. He was arrested very clearly because of his political view and family association, and that is fundamentally at odds with the values of American values. He was grabbed by mass agents without due process. He was sent more than 1,000 miles away after a series of detention facilities. We were very pleased with the judge's questions in court. They were very thoughtful questions, and they obviously sought to hold the government accountable and ask them, why was he moved repeatedly? Why was he taken out of Virginia? Why was he brought to a facility 1,000 miles away when there were beds in Virginia and he had to sleep on the floor in the facility in Texas? So there are real questions that the government is going to have to answer, and they only have until 5 o'clock today. So we are very much looking forward to seeing those answers so that we can respond.
Well, I'd like to go to Dr. Badr Khan Suri's wife, Mahfez Saleh, who was speaking on Thursday outside the courthouse of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia.
I am here today not just as the wife of the political prisoner Badr Khan Suri. I speak for everyone who once believed that the United States stood for freedom and justice. On March 17th, masked federal agents abducted Badr outside our home in Virginia. His unjust and illegal arrest has turned our life upside down. Our three children have not seen their father for 44 days. They have only seen him on a screen wearing a red uniform used for those considered the most dangerous people in detention center. Our very young twins are not aware of what's going on. They just want their father to come back. But our oldest have a sense. He cries all the time and tries to hide his tears from his sibling. After his arrest, Badr, who suffered from...
So Mary Bauer, if you could just tell us what's next in his case.
The judge indicated that she would rule quickly. We are expecting answers from the government. The judge is expecting answers from the government to very specific questions that really go to the heart of our case. Why was he moved in the way, in this secretive way? Why was he picked up for removal to Louisiana and then Texas? We will have until 6 o'clock tomorrow to respond, and then we do expect a ruling relatively quickly from the court.
Mary Bauer, executive director of the ACLU of Virginia, and Nader Hashmi, thank you so much for joining us. Nader Hashmi, professor of Middle East and Islamic politics at Georgetown University and director of the center where Badr Khan Suri was a postdoctoral fellow, Georgetown Center for Muslim Christian Understanding. And that does it for today's show. A very happy birthday to Dennis Moynihan. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Marie Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Anjali Kamat, and Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Toreri, and Buffy St. Marie. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman for another edition of Democracy Now!
Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada is honored to host the annual CMC Congress from June 10 to June 12 at the Hotel Saskatchewan in Regina, Saskatchewan. Under this year's theme, The Future is Co-op, join us for thought-provoking plenaries and participate in interactive workshops and breakout sessions. To learn more or register, please visit www.canada.coop now.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
You are listening.